Before we begin our second season, we wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the current political moment. To start, we want to state for the record that we both strongly support Black Lives Matter. We also want to be clear that we both take it to be an uncontroversial fact that we live in a white supremacy. This isn't a controversial term in academia, in particular when it comes to critical race theory. It's used to refer to the way that our world is structured, namely that society is built to favor white people. One reason that people resist the term, I think, is that it sounds like we're saying that society is a compilation of white supremacists, as though secretly in our hearts, we actively wish for the dominance of the white race. And that's a very psychologistic way of looking at things and is just inaccurate. Acknowledging that we live in a white supremacy doesn't have anything to do with everyone secretly actively wishing for the oppression of non-whites. In fact, part of the problem is that to white people, the ease we have compared to other races is invisible to us. We don't even notice it, and it seems normal. And just a quick word about privilege. That's not to say that everyone who's white or a man has it easy or is automatically successful. This is a common misconception. We have positive associations with privilege, where often you'll hear people use it in a sentence like, oh, it's such a privilege to be able to do this thing that we're actively grateful for. And so I think part of what trips people up about privilege is that it's not a thing we're registering. And that's part of the problem. What it means is because of your identity, you have had the fewest impediments. That's just a better way to think about it. And it's hard to register because what you don't see is how many more impediments everyone else has because of their gender or their race or their sexuality or their class or their disability or whatever. To begin to reckon with the fact that we live in a white supremacy, we have to be able to question what we see as normal, to question a lot of what we take for granted. That involves a lot of listening, a lot of reading, a lot of watching YouTube lectures and documentaries. We don't have one or two things to unlearn. We have to reorient our sense of the whole picture. That also means questioning which stories we tell and how we tell them. A lot of what we do on this podcast is about questioning the history of male-dominated stories, which mainly relegate women to secondary characters. In the last episode of our first season, we talked about Spike Lee's 1986 film, She's Gotta Have It, and our discussion included mention of the white gaze, which is just as important to keep in mind. Our Western canon has long been held up as significant in part, so the story goes, because it offers a timeless, universal insight into what being human means. The problem is, most of those stories are about white men, and that becomes a problem when we start to see whiteness and maleness as the essential humanity, because other stories seem less universally relevant. How often have you heard a man say, oh, that's a story about a woman, I wouldn't know how to relate to it? Meanwhile, I've never heard a woman say the same thing about a story featuring a male protagonist. What we need to do is question what we find easily relatable, who seems quote-unquote easily likable, and to stretch our imaginations beyond what we take for granted as universal and essential. Women and people of color need to be able to see themselves represented in narratives as protagonists. But just as importantly, white people need to see more narratives with non-white protagonists, and men need to see narratives about women and non-binary people.
Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark!
We are recording.
Can I mention your penis show at Buddy's?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Because I feel like that is relevant to this particular episode. Who knew all those cock shots would just continue to keep being relevant in your life all the way up to today?
I know. I don't know where they are, because I would actually love to remount that. It's so funny.
I would love to remount that.
And you know what's funny? I had a chat with the bun, and I was like, did you put all the cock shots for me? And then he's like, I think maybe I did. Like, we can't remember if he printed up 200 cock shots. Like, that's a funny friendship.
It's like, yeah, it also, yeah, exactly. It says a lot about your lives.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's actually start here.
All right.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to yet another episode of She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark. In which we talk about Fleabag Season 1, Episode 6.
Yes. The Sexhibition.
The Sexhibition, yeah.
Yeah, shall we to what we want?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Do you want to go quick? Do you want to go quickly? Do you want to go first?
God, Lisa, oh my God. You just be succinct today?
That's so funny. Yeah, that wasn't at all the word that was supposed to come in my mouth. That's hilarious. Do you want to go first?
Okay, this is amazing. So okay, sure. What do I want? Well, I think kind of one of the things I was mentioning to you earlier is that I don't know how to get this, but that's okay because this is just, you know, what we want, not a self-help show on how we're going to get our goals. Yeah. But I want more ease in my social life. Mm-hmm. As a solo isolator, as we basically both are, I mean, you have an upstairs housemate, but mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends for whom I am very grateful and have a wide community around me, some of whom I see for, you know, distance walks, some of whom I see indoors, and some of whom I see on Zoom. I love all of them. It's wonderful to have that. But I find at this point in the pandemic, as we are 5 months into this shit, I am exhausted with constantly maintaining that. It feels like so much work to constantly like schedule things for myself. And next week, okay, so this is maybe like how I'm going to get it temporarily. Next week, I'm going to the cottage with my friend Susan, who has appeared on the show, actually, to mm-hmm. talk about Gosford Park. It's a wonderful episode. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. Susan is brilliant and charming and funny. And so she will be with me and my mom at the cottage for 5 days. And I'm so excited because like just to have another person there just adds a little bit more ease to the dynamic. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, like it sort of breaks it up. It, you know, changes the amount of work I have to do, you know, because I don't always have to, it's not just me and my mom, like figuring out what things to talk about. It's having a third or fourth person there sometimes just makes things feel a little bit like everyone has a bit less work to do. So absolutely. I'm very excited for that. And that I have to say will be the highlight of my fucking summer. Yeah, that's what I want. What do you want?
Well, I was thinking, it actually was when I had Annabelle was my second guest that I've had this whole time. We had a backyard visit the other day. And I was just talking to her, sort of just giving an update of my life. And I realized that from a few years ago, what you had just said, where you don't know how you're going to get there. I remember I was like, okay, I'm here and I want to kind of get there. Mm-hmm. I feel like in like almost in the last 2 years, I've literally changed almost everything about my life, and not the fundamentals, but like I'm teaching more. I'm teaching for way better rates. I have a gallery like I wanted. There's a real, real keen thing on my project. I feel like I understand my body in this way that I was always striving towards, but I never thought I would get to as smoothly, I guess, as I have in the last months. So I just wanted to honor this huge that I had done with like, you know, 10 years of crazy amount of work and all this stuff. I just really, yeah, realized that. And I wanted to honor it. And then I wanted to be open to the possibility of what another 2 years of this kind of shifting, working on my self-esteem and really making a life plan and kind of going after it and what that might bring. That's what I want.
That's awesome. I have to say that you have come such a long way, even in the time that I've known you. I think that it's so funny that you say that, like not to be like, and now back to me, like about you, let's talk about me. But I actually had that same thought about my life this morning. Like, I think, because we are both people who are working very hard on a daily basis to sort of try to change our lives in meaningful ways, because we both have body stuff, for example, that we work on every day, and mental health stuff we've been working on consistently for years. And sometimes it's hard to notice those small incremental changes. This morning, I just had this moment of feeling frustrated with something that has been kind of bugging me. And then realizing that despite the fact that this thing is bugging me, I am dealing with it way better than I would have 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. And just having a moment of being like, whoa, like what can I do in another 2 or 3 or 4 years?
Yeah. So really exactly the same thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just interesting that, yeah, we're just very like on the same page about that. And Yeah, it's just
cool. Yeah, because yeah, some of the things when I was going through it, I almost can't believe how well it's lined up. And honestly, the creativity I'm afforded right now in my life is blowing my mind that it exists. And in the art world, there's so much less paperwork and bureaucracy in the film world. So like a lot of it seems astonishingly cool. So I'm just excited, yeah, now to move through this. Yeah, it was just in a sort of different way. But yoo-hoo, go us. This was a very inspiring and good session.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
All right.
On that note.
On that note, Fleabag. Even on my first watching of the show, I was so taken with the sexhibition of the godmother character, Olivia Colman. And watching it again now, today, with a mind that we were going to chat about it, I realized how this last episode, so it's the last episode of the first series, is such an excellent climax to the end of the series that has all these things that like bring it to a head. Essentially, nobody kind of shows up for her and it brings it to this head. So it's just really expertly crafted, almost like a French farce in a way, in terms of that kind of exquisite crafting. And as we always talk about, like heartbreaking and hilariously funny. So it's almost like the epitome of the Fleabags so far in this episode, I believe. Those are my first thoughts.
Yeah, do you want to say more about why you think it's such a perfect climax? No pun intended.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's a perfect climax because, well, I suppose it's interesting to, the way I noticed it, you know, at the beginning, she's like, oh, I've got my handsome boyfriends with me. You know, the pretty mm-hmm. one. Oh, this is in the culmination of the sexhibition because there are other little bits that we'll be talking about. But at the party itself, she does arrive with him. And, you know, then she was calling Claire, like, where are you? Where are you? She wanted her buddy, like her safety person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then, yeah, Claire, for a different reason, not only wasn't her safety person, was in and out and mad at her. And then the mom made her a waitress essentially and put a sticker on her, the most humiliating thing. Her dad didn't protect her.
Yeah.
So it's just like just watching. Normally someone, some lover, some person will have her hand. Do you know what I mean? And like kind of be with her. So I felt like in this perfect storm of nobody being there for her culminated when Olivia Colman started talking about the sexhibition, how sex brings life. Then she went into a flashback about Boo because it was sex that messed that up too. So I feel like, yeah, that's the sort of crux of the real mastery, I think, to leave her so vulnerable that she really cracks.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that there's a piece of every single relationship she has in this show kind of coming to a head. When the stepmother character does say it brings life, that in fact the flashbacks start to show us that in fact her affair with, like, it's basically explicit enough that I can say this, her affair with Boo's boyfriend is exactly what caused Boo's death, right? Mm-hmm. That it is in fact the opposite for her, and that's what she has been traumatized by and struggling with and feeling immense amounts of guilt and shame over, that this sort of like allegedly like life-giving force is actually what was her downfall. Yeah, which is sort of part of her monologue there at the end as well. So you're right, it is a just beautifully crafted kind of episode where it just again has that sort of frenetic sense of a bunch of small things happening, but those small moments are so jammed with meaning and significance that the show is just so satisfying to watch.
It is. Oh, and then I thought of just one more person that not so much let her down, but remember her original fiance, whose name I've actually forgotten, was her mom. Harry had been sculpted without a penis, naked. So he was kind of like oddly thrown in the mix in some kind of also humiliating way for her. Do you know what I mean? So it was really, truly every character that we kind of knew.
Right. Yeah, I'd forgotten that Harry was there.
Yeah, he kind of is. And then that weird, they took his penis off of that sculpture and put it on the wall, which also was so, yeah. Yeah, I know. And then just the detail too of the pretty man who she was quite sure was, she was reading the right signs that he was getting ready to say he was falling in love. And it wasn't with her. So then she was like, oh, he's gone too. Do you know what I mean? So even the expected, the lover that she was like, oh yeah, but he loves me because of the anal sex that we had. You know what I mean? So even he's gone.
And what's funny to me about that, if we just stay on that for a moment,
sure.
It does begin with him and her speculation that this is because he's falling in love with her. I don't ever get the sense that she's falling in love with him, right?
Yeah.
And so at the end there, when he basically rejects her, I mean, it's obviously devastating, but like, it's a much more for her about the fact that he doesn't desire her than the fact that like, whether or not she desires him at all, like that doesn't come into the picture. And I think that that's actually quite, I think that can be quite common in dating in general to focus on that kind of thing, but also for women in particular, I bet.
And it actually, one of my notes I took was the line, there isn't anything worse than someone who doesn't want to fuck me. So yeah, it's literally exactly. said explicitly like that. Yeah, in this episode. Yeah. I agree. I think a lot of folks feel that way. And that's why I think, yeah, I do think one of the reasons that I think Fleabag really resounds with folks, I think that might be stuff maybe you don't talk about as much, but people have feelings in that, in those, down those avenues, and Fleabag says them when no one else does.
Yes. I was just going to say when, like when I was at the height of my kind of constant, I don't want to say frenetic, but constant online dating, which was really when I lived in New York, which is when I just sort of probably did the most. I now and then, by the way, will just have a flashback where I'm like, oh yeah, and there's that guy I dated. Like I will have just forgotten about somebody. It will be lost to the mists of my memory. And then suddenly something will trigger a memory and I'll be like, oh my God. I can regale you with stories of that another time, listeners. But often, so I spend a lot of time talking to my girlfriends in New York City about dating and kind of how to approach dating and different kind of strategies for manipulating other people, but strategies for dealing with the insanity of it, right? The way that you can kind of, for example, create these narratives where you're interpreting somebody else's behavior, and often we have a negativity bias and it's very easy to create negative narratives that kind of center us in it, that it's somehow like rejection. Like a lot of the time rejection isn't really like that personal, which is its own devastating thing, you know, like it's not that he doesn't like her or that she's not a valuable human being. It's just that he's like formed this connection with this other person and that's just happened. And that sort of ends up eclipsing things for him, devastating for her. And often one of the other things that my friends and I in New York would ask each other is like, okay, you're very fixated on whether or not he likes you. Do you like him? Like, what do you think about him?
Yeah,
because that's a question that I think it's very easy to forget to ask ourselves. I mean, I still make this mistake, right? And it's very easy and very human, I think, to just, yeah, fixate on what other people think about us and have that be some sort of measure of our value.
Yeah, this episode is still, it's interesting, it's actually still very dense. And even just the example of, we'll probably get to it in a little bit, but the very end stuff where you start to see the relationship that Fleabag had with Boo's boyfriend, it's literally just flashes. Like it's like a half a second of an image, 3 seconds of this. And it's so tight. And even without dialogue, you get a sense of what happened in these like horrifying flashes. So it's just so dense and so tight. And even so it is basically focused on the sexhibition. There still are lots of other scenes as well.
I also just love, I hadn't thought about this until this rewatch. So when we did our episode with Marianne, we talked about sexposition as in like exposition that happens while people are fucking, as opposed to a sexhibition, which is an exhibition of art that is about sex. Yeah, so I keep mixing up those words as I say them. She arrives, and so again, the stepmother is, I don't know if we ever learn her name. The stepmother is flirting with her date, and she sort of turns to her and says, like, well clung to, which is just like, it's just so fast, and it's so nasty. And then hands her a tray like she's fucking Cinderella is how that felt to me.
Yeah.
She's like this bizarro, fucked up Cinderella who has in fact shown up with the prince who then abandons
her. Yeah.
Like it's like this, like it's so devastating. Oh,
I was going to say just the completeness of it, like the well clung to I had written down too. And that the sticker on the thing of like, I'm here to help. It was like complete.
Yes.
It was as if, yeah, it was like a perfect storm of complete humiliation in 5 seconds. And then again, like I said, the dad didn't, I mean, he historically hasn't really done anything, but he really did nothing. He kind of looked and then looked down and then shuffled away. So.
And then at the end, you know, says, you know, you should probably go.
Yeah.
Which is just him choosing his wife over his daughter because, I don't know, because Fleabag sort of is appearing to be acting out in these really like insulting ways to them, but nobody's seeing what's actually underneath that, right?
True. Yeah, I was thinking about that because it seems like, I know within family cultures, it's really easy to just get used to stuff. But that particular thing where she literally said, here, hold this tray and here's the sticker, like go pick up, or the stuff's in the kitchen. No matter how you slice the compartmentalizing of the dad watching that, that was like, that had gone past the line of what she normally does. Do you know what I mean? In terms of the insults and stuff, I thought. So it was just interesting to see him like still not choose his daughter, even when it seems extreme. And Olivia Colman with her smile, because it's so interesting, because it wavers between a real smile, like kind of to the audience, like to like be like, I'm not creepy. And then it's like mean to like mean, and then back to like, ha. Ah. So it's this really expert version of it that's very, very watchable.
It's very good acting, because she does say so much with that smile that is just sort of, that perfectly hits this kind of almost polite, but is in fact like forced and creepy and often insulting. Like it's often masking this cruelty. God, Olivia Colman's so good. Anyway, sorry. This is...
Yeah, no problem. And actually, yeah, I was looking at my notes here. I'll just go from the very first note I had in the episode when she was with the pretty boy, right in the very first scene. And then she says, stay sexy, always stay sexy.
Yes, yes.
In terms of almost like a mantra, again, that goes hand in hand with the worst thing in the world is when someone doesn't want to fuck her. Do you know what I mean? It's like her mantras. Yep. And then I thought it's interesting. The flashes into Boo, they seem organic. I remember she was looking at a pencil on his bedside table. And then it went into the flashback of Boo having that surprising reaction when she said that the boy put a pencil up a guinea pig's bum and went to jail. Detention. Yeah. Yeah. And then she said, well, why did they do that? They should have helped him. And I love that. I love that unexpected response. And I love that that is something that Fleabag remembers about her.
Mm-hmm. Which is also like, I mean, that's also speaking to this moment of Fleabag's life, right? Which is like, instead of shunning her, what it would be nice if somebody in her family who cared about her said like, what's going on? Like, what are you acting out about? Because there's something underneath this, kind of like that kid where Boo said, you know, like there's something underneath that people need to get to. And just tells us so much about that character again, who like, who I think in the entire series of Fleabag has got to be, there's only got to be like 5 minutes of footage of her, but there's just so much that's said about her character and how, like, what a wonderful friend she is. And like, even though she messes up and sort of like accidentally insults Fleabag sometimes, like it's never meant cruelly, and it's, and just her compassion for that kid in that story was just so striking.
Fleabag is still very honest about saying how great Boo is to us. So that's actually also brave on the storytelling part. So she's like, wow, I fucked this really cool friend who was great to me. So yeah, I think that there might be a tendency in a different storyteller to not focus on how cool and awesome and really authentic she was. But that's, I like that a lot. And then my next note goes back to the Olivia Colman thing that we were talking about when she was breaking the stuff and she said, oh, the joys of Butterfinger staff when she was smashing the stuff. So that's like literally like the well clung to. It's like, it's like if you're like in some kind of like battle of the mean wits, do you know what I mean? It's like so, such a sharp comment, but the staff. And I guess people don't know that's her stepdaughter or a goddaughter. I'm not sure what people know, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Another moment during this exhibition where the tables are actually turned for a second on the stepmother's character who they're looking at this wall of dicks, which P.S. just reminds me of an actual art installation that you have done. Do you want to say something about that for our listeners?
Sure. There was a show that went on for years at Buddies in Bad Times called The Penis Project. A show that was just like what it sounds like. It was all various projects focused on penises. And it was interesting, the year I was in it, it was, I think, like 34 gay men and me. And I had a project called No Cock Shots, Please. When I first started internet dating, I would always write that in the post. I would say, No Cock Shots, Please. If I like you, I will see it soon enough. I thought that was like honest and sassy. And the first, I think that I actually sort of was saving, I think I saved 1,500 cock shots in the first maybe 3 months of writing that. And I had
because the idea is that it almost encouraged them to send it to you.
Was what my guess, but now that all these other years have passed, I think that was just that because I was there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even think that they necessarily read that far. But at the time it felt that. Who knows? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe even was like, but no, but she hasn't seen mine. She hasn't seen mine yet. So let me send this one. Anyway, but yeah, so I had this idea without a lot of words and I didn't put my name. And actually most folks thought I was a guy, just sort of interest. And mm-hmm. I said, so I wrote the little blurb and I said, I always said no cock shots, please. And I said, this was the first 3 months of what I got. And they were just photocopied on black and white, so simple, and I had them arranged by which direction they were pointing, and there was two sort of flats, so you could go into a triangle of flats that had the cock shots pointing in different directions. So it was a really interesting experience, and those were truly all sent to me when I didn't want them, so I think that's interesting too.
yeah.
So yeah, cool. I'm actually, it was really cool that I did that. And I was thinking it could even be interesting to remount it like 10 years later. But I don't know where the photocopied pictures are, but I'm sure I could figure something out anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe the Kodak store that you went to sold copies. Somebody was like, what is this? Yes. But there's the moment where she asks her if she knows which one is her father's. And I think she points at a random one and Olivia Colman's face falls and she's like, yeah. And like walks away.
Yeah. That was a really interesting moment. Cause it was the only, I think that's the first and only time you really see Olivia Colman where it seems like something really like affected her.
Yeah.
She seemed really deflated in a way that I can't remember her being deflated in other times. So I guess it's that power thing. She feels like she has all the power over Fleabag, like 100%. And then for some reason in that moment when she thought, oh, maybe she does know what her father's penis looks like, which is so weird, she got devastated. So it's just an interesting also moment, an interesting choice.
Yeah. I mean, I also got the sense that that was an accident, that Fleabag just pointed to one and it just happened to be the right one.
Yeah. I thought that too.
Yeah. And then she looks at the camera. She's like, oops, I think that's all I had to say about that. Should we talk about the final monologue? Because that is, I think, like the final scene in the cafe where she's having a breakdown, where she's been wandering around the city all night. She almost kills herself, except that then the bank guy, I don't know what his job is called. I wish I knew.
Him the loan officer.
Loan officer. Yeah. Thank you. Sounds a little bit better than bank guy. The loan officer actually kind of drives up to her, almost kind of like somebody rescuing her from herself, right? Just to kind of go back to this Cinderella theme. And they go into the cafe and she has this monologue where she says, I've written a couple of lines down where she's crying and she says, sometimes I wish I didn't even know that fucking existed. My body is the only thing I have left. And when that gets old and unfuckable, I may as well just kill it. Oh, which is devastating, not least because of the pronouns she's using, where she literally talks about her body like it's an object.
And it, yeah.
Nothing worse than someone who doesn't want to fuck me. Does everyone feel like this a little bit? Or is it, and they're just not talking about it, or am I completely fucking alone? Oh, it's so brutally honest and devastating.
I don't think he had any idea that he was going to sign her up for the loan again, but that was so honest and raw. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it, then he's like, I don't know whatever the impulse was, but then he wanted to help her suddenly.
Because he looks so uncomfortable and you think he's just leaving because he's being British and awkward. And then he goes to the car and he gets the loan papers out of his car and brings them back, which is a sort of beautiful moment that goes back to that episode. I think it was episode 4 where they're at that retreat and he's trying to learn how to be less misogynistic.
How to be like, good job, Patricia. Like he's come from there.
Yeah. And now it's not just like lip service. He's actually helping her.
And then it was that moment how they actually connected though, because when she said it's a cafe for guinea pigs, she laughed and he goes, see, I told you it was funny. So it's interesting. Yeah. They were the unlikely duo that you thought would actually have a human connection.
Yeah. And it brings it full circle because I think in the first episode is when she goes for the loan.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I had just a note with the very ending, because it does end on a sort of soft, fuzzy-ish note. Do you know what I mean? Where they kind of connect more. She's got her loan. Oh, and just as an aside, didn't the sister a couple of episodes say she was going to pay for the cafe? And then I guess that was retracted.
So that's when she brought Martin, because she said, I'm going to fucking Finland. I'm going to give you the money for the cafe or whatever. Yeah. She comes back with Martin, her husband, and this is Claire, and says, you know, well, he says it was much more like the other way around. And Fleabag says, well, it wasn't, you have to believe me, but her sister doesn't believe her, because we also learn in that short exchange, which is so dense, that her sister knows what happened with Boo. Like, her sister knows that Fleabag slept with Boo's boyfriend, because she looks at her and she says, after what happened to Boo, how can I possibly trust you,
like that. I wonder how, do we find out? I might have just forgotten. How did she find that out?
We might find out in season two. I'm not sure. I can imagine that, like, maybe Fleabag confided in her afterwards. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she does seem to have a sense of what happened more than, you know.
Yeah.
Most people.
Yes. So I guess it feels like it almost like is almost poetically fuzzy when then all of a sudden the money now possibly can come from this other guy that was a surprise that actually opened up to her because she was so honest. So you're like, oh, nifty worm. And then it has like heartwarming music right at the end. It ends on the soft note. It's like kind of heartwarming, almost sappy for a couple of bars. And then it goes right into death metal.
Yes.
So it's just that interesting. Like, I've really never felt as much yanked around, but I like it. Yanked around pleasantly. On a show as this one.
Yeah. That final moment of connection is for neither of them is about sex, right?
True.
Which is something that they both have had to struggle with. So it's like this moment of, it's not as though they've necessarily kind of gotten to where they need to be, but it's a moment of like an opening up, maybe, in a way, because it's just like they're connecting, they're actually having a human moment, they're doing things for each other, and it's not for her about getting fucked, and it's not for him about grabbing her or whatever his problem was. Just this sort of like, I don't know what that Leonard Cohen line is, but it's like the crack where the light gets in, like you can just kind of see that there's this opening.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, the first episode, not the first episode you see him, but that episode at the retreat, they also had that where they would, remember, I think she actually said she wouldn't speak, so it was harder for her at that time. She just did the Ziploc mouth, but they did also sit there and share a cigarette and have some moments also that weren't sexual. I hadn't thought about that before. So that character has already brought that to her a little bit.
Yeah. Gosh, so just such a well-crafted show.
Yeah.
I can't wait for season two. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I'm really keen for it to come live again, where you can go into a movie theater. Or I wonder if they would stream it even, you know, like she would do a live show and then you could still be able to see it live. I hope that opens again. That seems very interesting for me now.
I think that was on Amazon, but I don't know if it was available in Canada for streaming in, you know, personal streaming. So sorry for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about. I think we mentioned this in our discussion of episode one, but this miniseries was based on a Fringe show that she did back for the Edinburgh Fringe a few years ago. So she has, that is recorded, a performance of that has been recorded and is sometimes live streamed in movie theaters. Or not live streamed, but is played in movie theaters. Is that what?
That's my understanding. And I feel like they redo that one. And maybe I'm wrong, but I believe there's also special events where she actually does it live again that you can also stream, which I'd also love to see. I mean, I'm interested in any aspect because I'd be keen to see the roots of where Fleabag came from. And then, I think that would be actually interesting. I feel like I would be able to understand her creative mind if I could see where it came from and where it ended up. I think that's always an interesting journey to...
Totally. So if that happens, then we can do an episode maybe of that.
Ooh, that would be interesting. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all my thoughts for that episode.
Those are all my thoughts for the sexhibition episode.
Stay tuned for more Fleabag, because we will be talking about season two. As ever, please rate and review us on iTunes if you are so inclined. And also message us on our Facebook page. No one has messaged us yet, Lisa.
It's true. No one has emailed. We do have Gmail. And I do. Although our audience just recently, we were at a solid, I think, 13 regular listeners, and now we're at 27. So I feel like with this new growth, someone will email us.
Hopefully.
I'd love to hear what other people want, and then we would read those out as well.
Exactly.
Or suggestions of what you'd want to see us talk about. So it will happen.
It will happen. In the meantime, keep listening. Keep listening to us wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time.
Now
that we've said it, we gotta get it. Did you just clap your own hand?
I clapped my own hand to my own hand. I pretended it was you.
'Exhibition. When she shows up at the sex position, I can't like it.